What we're going to do first, rather than have questions now, is to ask Professor Derek Smith, who is a director of the WHO Coordinating Centre on Emerging Diseases here in Cambridge, to respond to some extent to Seth's talk and maybe start the conversation about how Cambridge might be involved and engage in this important activity in terms of global health.
Thanks very much, David. What a fabulous talk and what fabulous mission from Gavi. Our Vice Chancellor gave a talk 2 weeks ago in Australia, and he imagined the difficulties of a Minister of Health in a low-income country and asked the question, should and can a university such as Cambridge University help that Minister of Health? Considering the moral and academic values, of course, it is a resounding yes that we should and that we can, but not only because of the mission of the university, which is to serve society, but also because by engaging with people and to be constantly engaged and engaged in their very, very difficult challenges, one of the ways that we can deepen our understanding, and there is always a fabulous synergy in these types of activities. We as universities are in a unique position, and I add beautifully complementary position to Gavi's position, for as the VC said, for six reasons: because of our independence, because we do things openly, because of peer review in the academic world, because our mission is to reveal truth, because of the trust that we have to endear in order to do that, because of the partnerships that are so natural and needed that people employ to solve problems. People in universities are solving problems, and the integrated way in which this is done across many disciplines, again, because it's needed and it's natural to solve problems. And also, of course, because of idealistic academics who are committed to changing the world, who can bring in networks, can bring in some instances, profound expertise. And we know that there are many, at many universities around the world, including Cambridge. As David said at the beginning, the Cambridge in Africa program, with over 100 PIs from across the university, the vet school, the medical school, biological sciences, the technology cluster here, social sciences, not only Cambridge in Africa, but this new Wellcome Trust Center for Global Health Research and the WHO Collaborating Center, with very broad and very collegial and cooperative integration throughout the university. And most importantly of all, idealistic students and idealistic postdocs in the droves that we are so lucky to work with, and that we can try to engage in the sort of missions for their lifetimes and for their careers that are important to exactly the sort of issues that Seth just talked about. Bringing the energy and the creativity of youth, bringing game-changing, positively disruptive research and technology to bear. And there are many examples of this, and I'm not going to go through many examples. We'll be meeting later today and just have before this to talk about some of them. I'm going to talk about one that is related to some degree to the sort of stuff that's talked about. That's led from Cambridge with collaborators in Rotterdam and in Santa Fe, New Mexico, that's directly related, as well as its scientific endeavors, to design of vaccines. The technology is called antigenic cartography. It's a way of assessing, for the first time, fine-grained differences between different strains of the pathogens in the sort of diseases where this is most critical for. For measles, it doesn't matter. We basically get the same measles that the Egyptians got. But for many of the diseases that cause a lot of the morbidity and mortality today, these are pathogens that have diverged over time, for which there are many serotypes, for which, as Seth mentioned at the end, it takes new technologies and breaking technologies in order to introduce these vaccines, and not only to have them be effective and successful immediately, but to remain effective and successful. And to do that, We have to understand how these pathogens are going to evolve in the face of introducing these programs. And this sort of partnership and the sort of game-changing way in which Gavi is doing things can game-change the science that's associated with it as well, to not only deliver these vaccines, but to see the effect of them and to see the effect so that that success can continue in the future, and use each new one as a learning process to understand fundamental processes to go better the next time around and with the next vaccines that will continue to come around. I'm going to talk about two examples on the evolution of pathogens. I'm going to talk about flu and I'm going to talk about dengue. Not immediately a massive on the Gavi radar today, but great examples, great science to be done. And it's fantastic that Seth and his colleagues are here today to talk about how this sort of technology can be applied to the pathogens of interest as well. This is a so-called antigenic map. This is a product of antigenic cartography. This is a way of taking the sort of data that has been collected for years in surveillance systems around the world, in this case, the fabulous WHO influenza system, to take those sort of data and multiply its effect by understanding the paradoxes in the data, the irregularities in the data, finding ways to statistically improve the accuracy of the data, and produce these things called antigenic maps. Each of the colored dots in this map is a different strain of influenza virus. And the distance between the dots in this map is how similar these two pathogens are to each other antigenically. In other words, how similarly they will be seen by our immune system. If you can imagine an individual who's infected with the strain at the center of this circle here, that individual is going to be protected not only against that strain, but against strains that are similar to that strain antigenically. And the range of protection for the flu vaccine and for flu natural infection as well is about the radius of this circle. You can see that that only covers a small portion of these influenza viruses. The influenza viruses that it's covering here, these are H3 influenza viruses from the pandemic in 1968, the purple cluster at the top. And what we can see here is the evolution that has happened since then. The next blue cluster evolved 4 years after that first cluster. You can see that the previous vaccine would be barely protective, a little bit, but really not very much protective against where those strains evolved. Those strains evolved in the case of flu because of immunity in the population. And that process proceeded over time. The numbers in here indicate the year when that cluster first appeared. And every time there was a new cluster, the vaccine had to be updated. This work was published in 2004. And within 2 weeks of this work being published, because there were connections into the WHO center, into the WHO collaborating centers in this network, this work began to be integrated into the World Health Organization vaccine strain selection process. Using data, 100 times more data, actually 1,000 times more data that was in that antigenic map that I showed you, from all parts of the world here, from over 100 countries. These data are collected, sent to one of 5 catchment centers around the world where they're analyzed extremely carefully. And over the last 10 years, those careful analyses have been sent to our laboratory here in Cambridge to do this sort of antigenic analysis. And I'm going to show you the evolution of these pathogens that we actually get to see in front of our eyes. We're going to look at the bottom portion of this antigenic map here. We're going to look at how the influenza virus has evolved since 2002. Each of the dots here again represents a different strain of influenza virus, in this case taken at a different month from somebody's throat somewhere in the world. The blue dots indicate the vaccine strains since around about 2000 through to the present day. You see there's been about 5 updates of the vaccine. And in the space of 1 year that we took you through in the movie here, the virus has evolved sufficiently to necessitate an update of the vaccine. As we go through 2003 here, watching this evolution in front of our eyes, we see another jump of the virus here and necessitating another update of the vaccine. And again here in 2005, another. Let's just look at 1 month per year during that period. Here in 2002, 1 year later, update the vaccine. 2 years later, update the vaccine again. and 1 year again. This was a particularly adventurous time for the virus. The virus doesn't normally evolve this quickly. In fact, in the last 4 years, it's remained in the same antigenic cluster. What we have here is a disruptive technology to understand this type of evolution. And as well as disruptive technologies, things like universal, or perhaps more realistically, more broadly reactive vaccines, to bring into scope the sort of vaccination against HIV and some other pathogens that Seth talked about, also breaking technologies to understand what's happening as a result of that vaccination. And of course, to go further to say, well, what next? What we've just showed you is what? To show how the virus is evolving around the world. And we're now, and other universities around the world as well, involved in a great deal of research to see if we can fundamentally understand these evolutionary processes to predict what's going to happen, to get ahead of the game instead of following it, to get new strains in the vaccine before they're needed, possibly even to block off the evolution of these pathogens and make our vaccines not just successful today, but successful into the future. Here's another example, and this is an example that is led by one of these fabulous students that we talked about with such creative energy. This particular student is Leah Katzelnik, with help from Sarah James and Judy Fonville, also both one student and one postdoc in this university. Leah saw this technology and she says, I want to do this for dengue. She pulled together this network of over 20 laboratories around the world of dengue researchers and dengue surveillance in order to apply the same sort of technology to dengue. And of course, one of the big holes in dengue understanding in the world is Africa. And with the Cambridge in Africa program and the Thrive program has also pulled together institutions in Africa to start to get some understanding there as well. Because of course, as Seth just mentioned, it's such an important part of the world for many pathogens. The prevailing wisdom in the dengue world is that there are basically four serotypes that, for which there's some antigenic variation within and a fair amount of antigenic variation between, such that basically we can consider dengue as being four primary serotypes of pathogens. If that's true and we think about vaccinating against dengue and we're not in the fortunate position of a hugely broadly active or a universal vaccine yet, then we would imagine, and this is the strategy today, to have a vaccine strain against each of these serotypes. What Leah did is to organize a systematic, globally representative study with Gates funding and NIH funding, and now subsequently further Gates funding, to really try to characterize and see what this situation is like. And it's actually very different than the accumulated wisdom. It's like this. There is substantial antigenic variation within the types, and also, the amount of variation within the types is of the same order of magnitude as between types. So we can't just think of separate types and leave it there. That this may be critical for antibody-dependent enhancement of disease, and it may be critical as well for vaccination if this is about the range of vaccine coverage where you're getting most of the viruses, but you're not getting them all. And this is also a great example also of the things that Seth mentioned in his talk, because what happens when there is a dengue vaccine and it's rolled out in this sort of way? What happens to the virus? Well, if the vaccine is effective, these strains that are covered by the vaccine, their coverage is going to go down. We're certainly going to see a dip. But what about success into the future? What about some of these variants that are not there? Are they going to come up? And of course, this is not just an issue for dengue. This, as I said, is another exemplar, and many of the pathogens that Seth talked about has exactly this, as he mentioned. You know, if we're thinking about meningococcus A, if we're thinking about HIV, if we're thinking about scrub typhus, if we're thinking about the rotaviruses, again, what happens? What happens when you go in to the viruses that are not covered? It's also potentially an issue with the human papilloma vaccine as well. As well as this, we want to know how well our vaccines are working and what sort of coverage one is getting and what sort of coverage over time. And this also allows the sort of technology to be able to map out the immunity that's related post-vaccination, both post-infection, post-vaccination, post-boosts. And what we're showing here on the base here of this map, is the same sort of antigenic map as I just showed you. And in the vertical dimension, we're showing the immunity that individuals have against different strains. Because there are different strains out there, some of these vaccines have to be multivalent. And when they do that, there's an issue with getting the same amount of intensity of response to each of the vaccines. There's an issue with, as Seth mentioned, with the malaria. How does that immunity wane over time? What are the issues? This sort of technology allows that. In this particular figure, the red plane that you can see that intercepts what we call the antibody landscape, that blue plane above, is considered for this particular pathogen the range of protection. You can see that this particular individual is going to be protected against these yellow and blue viruses at the end, but not so protected against these green and red ones here. These are just a couple of examples. It's one technology of many that exist in this university and many other universities as well. And this really is a great opportunity. I think that the fantastic engagement of Gavi with the financial world and creating new models for how this works to make it possible to do this. The engagement with public-private partnerships, the engagement with governments, and the engagements with industry to do the sort of things that you talked about will they allow virus vaccine to be sold at much lower prices in other countries? And what a great opportunity for integration with science, as we talked about before, for not only applying this science, but for really testing this sort of science in the field, in the line of fire, hand in hand with these rollouts so that we can keep these vaccines successful over time. And that's not only on the science side, the technology side as well, as Seth talked about. The sociology side in terms of how to get vaccines delivered in places like India, in places like Pakistan, where there are issues, and the sort of breadth that there is at many universities in the world, it really is a time to continue to foment the sort of fabulous changes that Gavi are inducing and that hopefully we can be a part of here as well in Cambridge and throughout the world. Thanks.